And I just think it would be better if we dealt with this issue through the legislative process.
Questions of Representative Teague, Representative Ford, Representative.
Thank you. I'd like to inquire as to one word here, or one phrase here. You refer to nude dancing. And I wonder why you might not prefer to say may prohibit or regulate nudity in public places. Let's be frank about this. Whenever you try to regulate something, somebody's going to try to get around it. The next thing you know, you're going to have people who are not dancing, but who are walking or standing in these bars. And let's face it, if you're not comprehensive, somebody can get around it. What if it just plain said nudity in public places?
Mannix, if you would like that amendment, I would not object.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Isn't that their amendment?
If not, thank you very much, Representative Ford, Representative McTeague. Senator Kintai, and I noticed another senator, I think, lurking about there. Do you wish to do a duo up here?
Yes. Thank you.
Senator Kintai.
Chairman?
Yes, Representative Miller.
Just observe for Representative Mannix.
Check the amendment.
Representative Mannix, you'd find in your packet, I guess marked, I think that's 7,
the
proposed amendment on HJR 20, SJR 10. It perhaps takes care of the language problem you just surfaced.
Is this in the paperclip packet?
Yes.
For some reason, I don't have it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senators.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, senior Senator Stark.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your courtesy in allowing us to come in here and go ahead here without waiting. I'm Senator Bob Kintai, Senate District 14. In the interest of time, I will not discuss the need for this legislation. Some of my constituents from Sandy are here who can cover this subject very well. I would like to just speak to one thing, and that is that I would like to see this worded the way we have worded SJR 10-1, and that is to have it to read that the cities, counties, or the states have the authority to regulate activity or expression characterized by emphasis on nudity. And I feel that this would be a more saleable measure going out to the voters, and I feel that would be that the cities and the counties should have this option to move ahead if the state does not. And so we're just, this has started out as a grassroots measure, and I think that it's good that it it'd be that way. So that's my desire, that it would include that, cities and counties as an option. They would have the option of doing it. If another city did not want to do it, they would not be forced into it. Thank you.
Representative, pardon me, Senator Kennedy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman and committee members, for the record, I'm State Senator Bill Kenimer from Clackamas County. Appreciate this opportunity to speak in favor of HJR 20. And I also would support Senator Kintai's amendment. I think broadening it would be good. In my district, we have a situation where a local former pizza parlor is being converted into a new dancing establishment. I'm sure that you'll hear more about it as the evening progresses. It's created quite a stir, and it's been very upsetting for our local people to feel like they could not exert any kind of control over this situation. It's been very difficult to try and bring what many of us feel are appropriate community standards and concerns for the regulation of this kind of business between the actual statutory and constitutional problems, and then the OLCC, there's very limited recourse. And I think this bill is an attempt to address that and would be something that would serve the best interests of Oregonians. And I appreciate it. Also, to Representative Mannix's earlier question about nudity in all places, that might cause some problems with some of the patrons of the arts. So that's another thing you may need to consider if you elect to go that direction. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy to take them.
Representative Calori.
I was going to ask Representative McTeague, but I didn't at the time. near the bomber, isn't there another place that's just feet away that's...
Yes, there is.
Tell us about that.
I don't know the exact distance. I would say probably a half a mile or so further away. And, you know, I don't think that very many of the people that you will hear tonight from my district are very happy about that location either. However, the pizza parlor is immediately adjacent to a daycare center and a youth recreation center that has miniature golf and video games and that sort of thing and ice cream area, as well as within a few hundred feet of a school. So I think that the case can even be made that the pizza parlor is a worse case than Dillinger's, which is the other facility that you're mentioning.
How long has it been operating that way?
I'm sorry, I don't recall right now, Representative Calori.
I would have a hard time understanding why one's okay and one's not.
I beg your pardon?
I would have a little hard time understanding why one is okay and one is not, or one has been tolerated for evidently quite a while.
I would, excuse me, Mr. Chairman and Representative Calori, I guess I would say that its entrance into our area was less than tolerated or appreciated from the beginning, and it's been a continuing community battle. And I would say it would be inaccurate to characterize it as accepted or appreciated by any standard, and quite the contrary. In fact, even today, some people were having some rather negative things to say about it.
Further questions of the senators? Representative Miller.
For either one, you've had a fair amount of public input on this measure, SJR 10 in particular, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Miller, yes, we've had terrific input and endorsement by a great number of various civic organizations, city councils, and various groups like this. It's been a real broad-based support.
The sense is that people also outside your districts, do they communicate with you, or are other people receiving communication to your knowledge in the Senate, at least on this issue?
Yes, we have. We've gotten communication both inside and outside the district.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Miller, in my experience, this is probably the measure that I have received the most phone calls and mail in. This is my second term. Actually SJR 10, but the same basic issue is there in either one. And I suspect that that's the most correspondence I've ever received on an issue.
My reason for inquiry, whereas I want to compliment the chair of the Judiciary Committee for scheduling SJR 20 tonight, I guess I would wonder about the difficulty of hearing SJR 10 in the Senate if there's such a great amount of public support.
Representative Miller, if you're going to embarrass our senators if we start to be critical of the Senate here, how they work over there. They're somewhat older body.
Well, I'm interested in the process as to whether or not theirs is about ready to jump out, which one would be the appropriate vehicle.
Mr. Chairman, just one more issue, as long as we're on the issue of protocol and all. I think that if I'm correct, since Senator Kentai and I were elected at the same time, I'm the senior member since my name starts with an K-E and his is K-I.
You claim to be older than Senator Kentai, though.
On some days.
No, I do not. Thank you.
We're hoping to have hearing over there on the Senate side.
Well, gentlemen, I've been here since 1979, and I'm still trying to figure out how to work with the Senate. Further questions of the Senate?
With your permission, I won't take all of those remarks back to the other side. Thank you, sir.
I have
one question. Go ahead.
Senator Brennerman, I have a concern. I mean, I brought up the question of nudity instead of nude dancing because there are ways, if we're not cautious, people will get around this. On the other hand, and you brought up, well, what about the arts? And there is always that problem. Unfortunately, a performance that might be considered artistic might include nude dancing, maybe some soon-to-be-famous ballet. My attitude would be that, help me with this, but it seems to me that if we were to get into this area, we would just have to say there are going to have to be some restrictions under our Constitution in order to protect society. But do you think that there's some other way of dealing with it and to protect? Anybody can say, I want to be nude because it's part of my artistic expression. Others can say, I'm making a political statement, being nude. But at some point, someone else's statement is sufficiently offensive to others that we have a right to protect ourselves from being offended, and our communities have a right to protect themselves. Is there some way around this?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Mannix, you know, I see Senator Kintai would like to say something as well. I guess that, you know, one of the beauties of the proposal that Senator Kintai has made, it would allow local jurisdictions to set that. So there may be exceptions from community to community, and that might make your amendment totally acceptable. For myself, that's fine. I really wouldn't mind. In fact, I guess I would support a total banning. But that's another standard, and that's one of the things that I guess this committee has to weigh.
Thank you.
May I?
Yes, Senator
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mannix, I would like to add to what Senator Kinnemer has said. And when we look at the reading here, or the wording as we have it here, it says an activity or expression characterized by an emphasis on nudity. Now, in the nude dancing, that is where the emphasis is. I would not see that in a ballet. I think the emphasis in a ballet is upon the movement and the activity and so forth. While if you did have nude ballet, why, I don't think that would be the primary thrust. It's the artistic form there, whereas in the here the major purpose is to emphasize the nudity in the case of the nude dancers. I think it's a different ball game.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Is Representative Clark here? Okay. If not, do any of the other representatives want to testify on this bill before I go to the regular order? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, now I'm going to go back to the regular order, and I'm going to try to move this through this as fast as we can. For all of our witnesses, and you're going to hear me say this constantly, please do not repeat prior testimony. Don't preach to the choir. And please don't repeat prior testimony. And when I get to HJR 20, I'm even going to put a limit on you. HJR 2214, we do not have any witnesses. Council, what is let's open work session 2214. Council, do we need to do anything with this? Representative Bryan, where's Representative Bryan?
Well, I can begin. Mr. Chair, committee members, you may remember the original House Bill 2214 required that Joint Corrections Education Task Force team membership include individuals with professional correctional education experience, and that the Commissioner for Community College Services would appoint staff from the Department of Education. Certainly. When the bill was on its way to the floor, Representative Calori spotted a problem with lines 7 to 8 of the A. and Gross bill regarding involvement with higher education. After consulting with Mr. Holland, the Commissioner for Community College Services, the issue has been resolved by providing that the Chancellor of the State Board of Education may appoint a team member. In front of you, in your packets, you should have a hand-engrossed bill with the Legislative Council -3 amendments to reflect these changes. The one other thing is that Representative Bryan was going to propose amending House Bill 2214, and you should have the amendments in front of you. They're -4 amendments, to provide that the team shall develop a functional literacy program for all Department of Corrections inmates. Features of the program include a functional literacy level test, availability to all inmates testing below a certain level, incentives for both entering and completing the program, and furnishing achievement records to the parole board.
So, Council, the first thing we would need to do would be to adopt amendments, the hand-engrossed amendments.
Correct.
Okay.
Do you want to move?
Okay, I would move the hand-engrossed amendments to 2214. These are our technical cleanup amendments before we get to Representative Bryan's substantive amendments. Any objection to the 2214 technical cleanup amendments? Thank you. Now, we tracked down the wayward Representative Bryan yet. He's hard to miss.
Peter.
Peter. So no.
That doesn't surprise us.
And darn welcome at that.
Representative Bryan, you don't have to get formal on us.
Okay.
Please feel free. Representative Bryan, we just adopted the technical side amendments 2214. Why not, and very quickly, tell us why your amendments on 2214-A4 are the best thing since sliced bread, and why we should adopt them.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. Basically, 2214-4 adds the creation of a literacy, functional literacy program within the educational component, correctional educational component. The intent is modeled after, there are about 7 states that have programs that have been deemed to be very successful. Creates a testing requirement, a screening requirement and then sets up a program to assist functionally illiterate inmates. We've got about, according to the Oregon Community Colleges Association, 60% of Oregon's prison inmates have limited reading and writing abilities. This is aimed at directly affecting functional illiteracy, not to start higher level programs. Virginia calls their program No Read, No Release, although we did
like No Pass, No Play.
Right. Although we are not specifying a non-parole condition here. Most of the programs nationally have worked well with a volunteer approach, as well as providing in-prison incentives. Extra visitation rights, other in-prison incentives. Also, some of the states have used very successfully an inmate tutoring program where you have inmates inside who happen to be either well-educated or at least sufficiently educated, and they end up tutoring the inmates. So it's a very cost-effective program. There's one change that I would suggest in 2214. We have a legislative fiscal impact that came out today that said no fiscal impact, money available within budget. The thing that does concern me is that the governor's package has set forth certain funding for other items, and I wouldn't think it's appropriate to interfere with those at this time. And I think that if we change the words on line 12, page 1, it says shall implement. I think we may need to change that to shall design. Let that development team come back with a separate proposal. I don't know if that'd be fair to burden the correctional education proposal already suggested.
So your motion, Representative Bryan.
I would move to first amend 2214-A4, line 12, change the word implement to design.
Okay. Any objection to implement, change the implement from to design? Okay, hearing none. Representative Mannix. Okay. Representative Mannix.
Representative Bryan, I wanted to ask one question. Are we being too specific here, or are you comfortable with how specific we're being in this set of amendments where we're telling them exactly what kind of score and so on and so forth? Is this something that you've discussed with the corrections people as far as the kind of a program they could put together?
Chairman and Representative Mannix.
Bryan.
Yeah, this has been discussed at length with both community college representatives and the corrections division. They're supportive of it, and we've tried to keep it fairly limited, fairly concise, so it doesn't open up a lot of expectations. We're zeroing in on functional literacy of inmates.
Anything further? Representative Bryan.
2214-A4 amendments to the bill.
As amended. Representative Bryan moves 2214-A4 as prior amended to be amended onto the bill. Any objection to that? Hearing none. Representative Bryan.
Jared, we're not in work session either, are we?
Yes, we're moving.
That's what gets we have. Mr. Chair, I'd move 2214 as amended to the full committee to do pass.
14 as amended, full committee do pass. Any further discussion?
Question.
Yeah. Clerk, call the roll.
Representative Ball?
Yes.
Bryan?
Aye.
Clark?
Aye.
Courtney?
Yes.
Maddox?
Aye.
Miller?
No.
Chair Mason.
Aye. Thank you. Representative Bryan, it's yours. House Bill 2653. Peter Van Dyke. Where is Representative Minnis when we need him? Mr. Van Dyke, go ahead, please.
Yes, Mr. Chair, my name is Peter Van Dyke. I'm president of the Oregon Council of Police Association, president of the Multnomah County Deputy Sheriff's Association, and probably more importantly, a uniformed police officer with 18 years experience who's been involved in probably in excess of 100 high-speed chases. I'm here in support of 2653, which would increase the penalty for attempting to elude from an A misdemeanor to a Class C felony. I think we've probably all seen on TV or in a movie high-speed chases where people crash and they walk away uninjured, they roll over and they continue to go. That isn't reality. Out on the streets, high-speed chases end in serious injuries, even death sometimes. When I was a young police officer years ago, I used to kind of look forward to them because they're fun. Now that I'm older and hopefully wiser, I find them terrifying, and I don't look forward to them, although I still have to do them occasionally. What our hope is here is that by upgrading the penalty, that we may be able to deter some people from attempting to elude. I've had them run from me because they were prison escapees or armed robbers or drunk drivers, all the way down to the fact that they thought they might be suspended or they thought they might have a warrant for them. And if by passing this bill you can deter one person in this state from running from a police officer in a vehicle, then I think you've done some good. That's all I have.
Members of the committee, I've also been asked to propose to you a further amendment of the bill. Essentially, Senate Bill 95 adds to ORS 811540 a further provision that attempting to elude would include the person getting out of the vehicle. Let me read the language. The person gets out of the vehicle and on foot knowingly flees or attempts to elude the police officer. That was proposed by Mr. Kaiser, who I believe is one of your lobbyists for the
Correct.
Officers
I could speak to that also. I didn't
yes.
know it was.
Do you
want
to speak to that, Mr.
Sure.
Van Dyke?
There's a couple of problems with that. In fact, that happened to me last night about 3 o'clock in the morning. I had a guy, I did a U-turn to stop him. He went around a corner, got out of the car, and ran on foot because he thought he might have a warrant. He didn't. Well, what happens when this happens, the guy pulls to the curb, he gets out of the car and runs. He hasn't committed any crime except the original infraction that you may have been stopping him for. So you have a bunch of other police cars come in. You may bring the tracking dog if you have one available, and you do a search, and you come up with the guy. We had a recent court ruling that this happened to one of our officers. The guy stopped. He ran on foot. The area was surrounded. Another officer captured the person. There was some evidence of another crime found. The court ruled that since the original stopping officer was the only one that had observed the original infraction, that he was the only one that could take the person into custody. So the fact that another officer captured this guy and found some evidence was thrown out because it was an illegal arrest because he had not seen their original infraction. So this has created a problem for us. And by making running on foot a misdemeanor, it would give other officers the authority to capture the person.
Any questions of Officer Van Dyke? Representative Bryan, speaking from experience, probably.
Yes.
As an officer, I might add.
Yes.
I was a fleet.
Mr. Chairman, the language that you had read, was that suggesting a Class C felony for...
No, well, I was going to discuss that after I got through the questions. We really are presented with, depending on how you combine it, the initial bill, which makes attempt to elude a Class C felony, the proposed amendment, which merely, the proposed bill, Senate Bill 95, which merely added fleeing on foot from the car to the present statute. So you could make it a felony, you could add the Senate amendment, or you could add the Senate amendment and make it a felony. To be very upfront about it, I'm more interested in the Senate amendment than I am in the felony, and the reason I'm interested in that is that we've we're reaching the point in this committee with felonies that, I mean, be them as desirable as they may, we are, I think we've used up our quota. Representative Courtney, have we?
I never saw, we never saw what, a criminal law bill we didn't like or something?
Yeah. So, you know, I as much as I see your point, it's just that I know what lies out there for another felony coming out of this committee. I mean, it will.
There are even some misdemeanors having problems.
Yeah, misdemeanors having problems. So, Mr. Van Dyke, I don't know where the committee is on it. I'm almost risked to turn the discussion over to these gentlemen. What's your feeling on this, Representative Calhoun? You interested in the felony or just interested in the addition of the... I think there's something to the fact the guy gets out of the car. To me, that's just a continuation of the attempt to elude. Maybe you haven't defended these. I unsuccessfully defended a lot of them, but they tend to be very funny sometimes. People are hiding in shrubs and claiming to have just been taking a midnight walk.
I never had a case, I had some cases involving people that fled on foot, but never thought to argue that was not in the purview of the statute, but I'll be looking for that case when we get here tonight when I get home. I'm going to support whatever the committee does, okay. And I think maybe we used our quota up, but I think the amendment to include foot fleeing is a good one.
Representative Clark, what's your feeling on any?
I'm not on the subcommittee. I understand your concern about that, but... I guess I'll wait and see what the subcommittee does.
Okay, Representative Mannix, where are you in this?
Probably yes and yes, but I'm taking a quick look because we're really dealing with looks like the motor vehicle code here rather than talking 811-540, and that's why I wanted to check. But I could see some concern about the Class C felony. I certainly want to include if he gets out of the vehicle and continues the charade, the chase, I certainly favor that.
Representative Clark?
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not even sure it should be a felony, even if we hadn't used them up. But
Representative Courtney?
I like the bill, but our pile of information is a very interesting document they're going to kill us on, and that's the physical analysis, if you read it. There's two categories in there that they're just going to start destroying this committee on it. You know, we're going to have bodyguards.
And we have been to the well.
On this. So just, you know, I like the bill, but somebody's got to tell the public what we're coming on, the heat we're being put on it now.
Chairman, I guess maybe it's the product of being here the last several sessions, but any time the House Judiciary has maybe sent over some increased penalties, they haven't all met with favor. In fact, darn few, and I guess I would feel more comfortable making a statement that what we feel ought to be the appropriate penalty, and they wimp out on us across the way, or whether or not they do something right.
Representative Baum?
I'm not going to amend this bill if you're asking me to.
Brian?
Just wait a second.
Mr. Chairman,
I got my one. a sweetheart pitch.
The reason I support the bill is the problem is that these high-speed chases, having been in a few, are probably the most terrifying, dangerous things a police officer faces, and with more regularity than any kind of firearms problems. And the real problem, it also endangers a lot of innocent bystanders. And that's the problem. And I have a great empathy for the bill. I understand it's real clear in the legislative fiscal analysis what the impact is on bed space and indigent defense. I probably still support this one, notwithstanding. I would try to muffle it down right after this one, Mr. Chairman. the fleeing on foot, I would support as a misdemeanor. A misdemeanor because of the clear and present danger of a high-speed chase is absent. And
why don't we stand down for a while, Mr. Dyke, and we'll return to this. Van Dyke, we'll return to this. I want to move on, but that gives me a sense of where we are. Okay, thank you very much, sir. 2357. How'd this bill get scheduled?
Another one of those.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Unfortunately, Representative Clark, please. I apologize.
That's right.
Representative Clark, we're going to defer to Representative Clark for a moment on HJR 20.
Mr.
You're going to do a demonstrate.
Is Burton going to do this one?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the subcommittee, I apologize I wasn't here before. Three things that new dancing in House Judiciary, legal aid funding in Senate Judiciary, and the Lake Oswego City Council have in common is that I'm supposed to be all three places at 7 o'clock. And so I apologize for jumping back and forth. I want to testify in favor of House Joint Resolution 20, but I want to talk for a minute about the amendments, the proposed amendments, and just have a discussion with you about those. By way of background, just tell you, Kelly Clark, State Representative, District 27. I'm also a lawyer in private practice in Portland, and about a third of my practice is in the area of constitutional law, the majority of that being under the Oregon Constitution. No one is more frustrated than I am with what has happened to the Oregon Constitution in recent years, with a couple of famous or infamous decisions. And the gist of those decisions has been that Oregon's Constitution is going to be construed independently of the federal Constitution. The federal Constitution, the theory goes, sets a floor on civil liberties below which states can't go. States must be at
Representative Forty moves 2808 passed as amended. Any further discussion? Clerk, call roll.
Representative Baum.
Yes.
Bryan.
Aye.
Flory.
No.
Horton.
Yes.
Maddox.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye. Representative, which one wants this? Okay, Representative Calhoun. 3324, relating to a victim's compensation. We're just about here, ladies and gentlemen. I'm moving as fast as I can. I got to.
Doing all kinds of good things on the way.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ernie Calhoun, State Representative from District 50. Bill isn't quite as.
Which one is this, please?
As juicy as the other ones that you're dealing with today. It's not no boot camps and no new dancing, just a basic little bill to help compensate some of the people who are affected by crime in this state. I hope that we're all working off of the hand and gross version that I've provided for you. I might just say that we just basically want to scrap the original version. All this bill does is it brings into the purview of the Victims Compensation Act family members who are also harmed by crimes committed against members of their family. My office has been in contact with the Department of Justice. They are in support of a one that would apply only to cases of homicide. The bill that I would prefer would be one that would apply to all crime victims, and the one that I provided for you is sort of a compromise bill. It kind of cuts right down the middle, and this would allow family members whose members of their family had either been the victim of a homicide, rape, or assault to fall within the purview of the statute. I think that a good practical illustration of this would be a situation where somebody were violently murdered, raped, or assaulted in a house, and because of that, some of the children, wives, spouses, or other people either that are family members either need some type of medical or psychiatric attention or lose support money in the form of compensation to the family unit in order to be able to function. I think it's a good bill. The only thing, obviously, that we have to worry about is funding. I hope to be able to deal with that and address it in ways and means. The essence of where we're at and where the money comes from for the current Victims Compensation Act is the Criminal Injury Compensation Fund, which is about $20 a case, and every time you run somebody through the system, they wind up paying for that. They're currently looking at making this a, some kind of a unitary compensation, because they have a number of separate compensations that are going to run into one compensation. It's part of a big program that's been worked on, I guess, for the last few years. This particular, this creates some problem with this, because that would mean that if we were trying to boost this, the fund, in order to be able to fund this through the unitary compensation that they're trying to create, there would need to be new percentages if this were going to require a greater percentage of money to be funded. So I hope to go down and deal with that in ways and means, either to alter the percentage or to make certain that we get this particular program funded outside of the normal unitary assessment, which is going to be happening in the court system in the future.
I have,
that's all I have.
I have, Representative Calhoun, why don't you sit there on the end of the table? I have two quick witnesses, and considering this is going to Ways and Means, is that correct? Considering this is going to Ways and Means, I think we ought to move it along, but let me get Mr. Bassinet up here and Ms. Christensen up here, and then we'll try to move on this immediately. Mr. Bassinet, where are you hiding? Calling once, calling twice, calling three times. Well, Ms. Christensen, where are you? Must be some mistake here. You're against this bill. Go ahead, Ms. Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jerry Christensen, director of the Crime Victims Compensation Program for the Department of Justice. I don't think we are against this bill. We have not seen the amendments from Representative Calhoun and would have no formal position on it. I was concerned about the fiscal impact with the broad base of all family members of all victims being entitled to the entire scope of the benefits through the compensation program. By limiting it to homicide, rape, and assault victims, that sounds much more workable, and we'd be happy to work with the representative's office on that.
Thank you very much, Ms. Christensen. Mr. Bassinet, fourth time. Mr. Bassinet's an experienced former legislator, has no excuses, but court reform. Representative Calhoun, the chair will move your amendments. And with editorial discretion, because they're hand engrossed at this moment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any objection to Representative Calhoun's amendments? If not,
and Ways and Means as amended.
Representative Cordy moves the full committee to be sent to Ways and Means as amended. Any further discussion? If not, clerk, call roll.
Representative
Maddox. Aye.
Aye. Yes.
Lori.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. You're not going to leave us now, are you?
Thank you. Well, I...
That's okay. Go ahead.
I just want to... I hope the committee... I certainly appreciate the voting of the committee. I hope the committee appreciated that I brought a little bit easier bill in that they could support to help crime victims.
At least it's not a felony, but it's... Representative Baum.
I'll settle for misdemeanor.
Representative Baum, 2796.
Oh.
I believe this is your baby.
Oh, it is.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, committee members. Yes. You might refer to your -1 legislative council amendments. As we left things, we were going to amend it, and these amendments reflect that.
Representative Baum.
As you know, this is probably our most serious attempt that we've dealt with trying to reduce indigent defense and actually maybe making some progress in that regard. The -1 amendments would address the concerns that were expressed in the previous hearing.
The bill cuts off this post-conviction relief unless they can demonstrate otherwise.
Like there's a unconstitutional statute or something.
Mr. Chairman? Door. Representative Mannix.
I move the -1 amendments.
Any objection to 2796-1?
Well, just wait a minute. I want to see them.
Chairman, on the motion?
Yes, Representative Mannix.
I believe those reflect the concerns of the state court administrator and also the concerns of some of the witnesses in regard to an escape valve for extraordinary circumstances. Otherwise, we do have a nice time-tight situation.
Okay, so these are the extensive amendments. Anything done on the it stays 120 days, if I may ask, is that correct?
That's correct.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
How do you feel about that?
That's fine.
Okay. Objection to the amendments? Okay. Representative Baum.
I'd move it to as amended to the full committee with due pass.
Full committee as amended. Call roll 2796 as amended.
Representative Baum.
Yes.
Bryan.
Aye.
Flory.
Aye.
Flory.
Yes.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Chairman. Aye. Representative Baum matures. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry for how that took that long. I'm not going to return to 3051 for a while. I just feel like I'm I've got so many people on HGR 20. If you're here on 3051, I will try to get you. Why don't we start with Mr. Jack Hammond, the city of Gladstone, on HJR 20. Ladies and gentlemen, everybody, I'm going to, if this was the Portland City Council, they have a marvelous little clock that they put in front of you. And in fact, Mr. Hammond, do you have a clock in your city council there that you...
Oh, I think just sort of boredom sets in after a while and gets us.
Let's try not to operate that. If you can... If everybody can confine their testimony to arbitrary, to 2 minutes, if not 3 minutes, that would help. And if that sounds like a short time, I have this huge list of people here. And at least my family or forget who I am, we'd like to make it reasonable tonight. So, Mr. Jack Hammond, City of Sandy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, Paul Osner and I were basically the drafters of the legislation, which is in the -1 amendment to SGR 10. Maybe I could just go through our thought processes in the drafting of that. I was very interested in the comments that Representative Clark made, and I have some concerns about his idea about deleting the last part relating to tying the standards to the standards of the U.S. Constitution. The problem with that, if we don't have a standard in the Constitution, I'm afraid what's going to happen is our Oregon Supreme Court is going to indicate that, well, the standards that they have now, which people that represent cities and counties, we have yet to discover how we regulate this area. We lose every time. Paul Elsner would have been here today, but he's having knee surgery. He's lost four times. David Anderson, back here from Clackamas County, has lost once. I'm in a case now that I could well lose. I don't know when a city or county in the last 5 or 6 years has won a case and has been able to come up with something that constitutionally flies. That's my concern. If we leave that language in, then basically what we are doing is incorporating the body of federal case law and keying into a bright line rule in a number of recent U.S. Supreme Court cases that will give us things that we really need. One of those involving the city of Renton, where we could actually prohibit adult businesses with a certain showing of prospective harm if they were within so many feet of a school or a residence or a park. We need that kind of protection. I was interested in Representative Mannix's comments about not adopting something that would interfere with the right of artistic expression. If we adopted the U.S. Supreme Court standards, we would be adopting Miller versus California, which has a three-part test which does prohibit or does protect artistic expression. Those are very strict standards, and we have a large body of case law that we could work with. It would also allow us to license new dancing establishments. It would allow us prospectively to ban the sale of alcoholic beverages in facilities where new dancing occurs under the 21st Amendment. I'm afraid that if we don't tie it to the U.S. Constitution, the only thing that we are left with doing would be creating a very comprehensive amendment to the Constitution, which would probably be as long as the Constitution itself. And I don't think we want to create a statute and make it a part of the Constitution. I've also indicated in my comments there's nothing distinctive about the way our Constitution is drafted in regard to freedom of speech provisions. It's very similar to a number of other states, and those states almost uniformly track with the standards of the U.S. Constitution. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Yes, sir, Representative Manning.
You did it, Mr. Hammond. 3 minutes and 3 minutes. Incredible. Representative Manning.
Yes, in regard to the new dancing problem, don't virtually all of these establishments serve alcoholic beverages?
They're, Representative Mannix, virtually all of them do, with the exception of there's a Jiggles in Tualatin that had their license taken away because of a hidden crime connection. They are a juice bar. There's Club Macombo in the city of Portland, also a juice bar. I think they may have had similar problems.
I ask this is under Amendments 21 to the U.S. Constitution. We can do almost anything we want in regulating places where alcoholic beverages are dispensed. And I'm just thinking out loud here as a short-term solution, just pass a bill, even while this is pending, as a parallel track thing. It just says the beverage control alcohol, is it ABC? I'm trying to remember the name of our OLCC.
Right.
The OLCC shall not permit anybody to dispense alcohol anywhere where nudity is permitted. Period.
Well, the only problem with that, Representative Mannix, is that it's been tried. City of Portland tried that, and in the case of Seckney versus Graphic Tavern, and that was thrown out.
I'm talking legislation by the legislature that just absolutely prohibits the dispensing of alcohol in any place where there is nudity.
Well, the problem, if you look at that's a Court of Appeals decision. Basically, their interpretation of Article 1, Section 8 is that is preeminent over the 21st Amendment rights that are given to states. That's the circular problem that you run into.
Thank you.
You bet.
Further questions? Representative Bryan.
Hammond, on your memo to us, or letter to us, dated April 4, page 2, question 4, you said, you posed a question, what kind of regulation would be allowable if this constitutional amendment was adopted by the electorate, and it lists some things. Are you referring to the constitutional amendment as proposed through
the SGR 10-1? That is basically the language that Paul Elsner and I drafted. I might also add that language has been reviewed and approved by a great number of legal counsels for cities and counties, and I've listed those in my submittal.
Further question, Representative Bryan.
That would be actually a little broader than the original HJR 20 language, because it could get at other kinds of, looks like it,
other
businesses and other establishments, including new dancing establishments.
So it would be others that might be able to be zoned.
That's true. It relates to, again, activities or expression characterized by an emphasis on nudity that would not be restricted to nude dancing establishments per se.
Further questions?
Thank you very much.
David Anderson.
Good evening, members of the committee. I'm David Anderson. I'm an attorney for Clackamas County with the Clackamas County Council's office. I'm here tonight to ask you to pass HJR 20 as amended in this HJR 20-1 for the reason that we would like to have our buffer zone ordinance back in Clackamas County. Back in 1985, we passed a zoning ordinance which established a buffer zone between adult businesses and adult what we identified as sensitive uses, which were residences and schools. And that ordinance worked quite successfully up until 1988, when it was declared unconstitutional under a line of cases based on Article 1, Section 8 of the Oregon Constitution. It's the same problem that the City of Portland had, the City of Sandy's has. And the reason we ask you to do this is that these kind of buffer zone ordinances have been found constitutional under the United States Constitution. They work very well. They are not extreme measures. They simply identify conflicts in land uses. Adult businesses have certain associated effects that are not desirable in residential neighborhoods. They have an adverse impact on residential neighborhoods and also upon schools. And so what we sought to do was separate these uses. Now, under the U.S. Constitution, the key is that you cannot ban adult businesses entirely, because that runs afoul of their free speech rights as they've been interpreted. But you can locate their and regulate their location and separate them from sensitive uses, residences and schools, on which they have an adverse impact. And that is what we sought to do. It's a very reasonable and logical and effective measure. However, that's now been struck down, and it was in this case that you've heard testimony on previously from Representative Kintai and others, the Milwaukee Station Tavern located in Clackamas County near the Bomber. The Board of Commissioners has passed a resolution in support, which I'd like to submit to you as an exhibit, and I have seven copies here, which if I could have your clerk perhaps come get them and pass them out, signed by Darlene Hooley, Dale Harlan, and Ed Lindquist, our county commissioners. And this basically recommends to you the language that's found here in HJR 20-1. The sole difference, I believe, is that HJR 20-1 says that the state shall have the authority to regulate activity, whereas what we would like to see is that the cities and the counties, as well as the state, should have that authority. And the reason for that is that zoning is a county matter and a city matter rather than a state matter as it's applied in the field. If you will amend your bill to give the cities and the counties this authority, we can reenact our zoning buffer ordinance. It's a proven concept. It works. It's been up to the U.S. Supreme Court, cases out of the city of Detroit, the city of Renton, Washington. It's allowed in Washington. It's allowed in Michigan. It's not allowed in Oregon because the current interpretation of Article 1, Section 8 says no.
Legislative assembly or cities or counties, or do you want to say, or any instrumentality of local government?
I believe cities, counties, and the state would be sufficient.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions?
The specific locations that were mentioned by the senators and representatives, both the pizza place and the one right by that I inquired about, are those considered residential areas?
Well, in Clackamas County, and excluding the incorporated areas, what we have for our commercial areas, and of course taverns must be in a commercial area generally, are long strips of development. We have McLaughlin Boulevard and 82nd Avenue, if you exclude the Clackamas Town Center. And so what we came up with was a buffer zone which would protect residential neighborhoods as much as possible without banning these businesses entirely, because you can't do that under the U.S. Constitution. And what we came up with was 300 feet. Now, this Milwaukee Station business is within 300 feet of residentially zoned property, and that's one of the reasons it's created such an uproar. There is one other tavern featuring nude dancing called Dillinger's, and that is not within 300 feet of residentially zoned property. And I might add that when it went in, there was nowhere near the kind of uproar. It is essentially in an island of commercial property, separated from some of the residential property.
I think your time's up. Thank you.
Thank you.
Clay Morgan.
I have, good evening, Representative Mason and representatives of the committee. I do have some packets. Maybe I could help you pass them out since they're so heavy.
Executive summary of your testimony.
Actually, I will try to be brief. My name is Clay Moorhead. I'm the city manager for the city of Sandy, and a couple things I would like to go over with you quickly. The cover memo that I've provided for you. The city of Sandy is a community of approximately 4,000 people and sits between Portland and Mount Hood. There are over 25 to 30,000 motorists that drive up Highway 26 daily to recreate in the Mount Hood area. In 1988, the city adopted regulations which would provide some reasonable regulations for adult entertainment businesses. The ordinance allows the businesses to locate in any location in a commercial district. The city would have preferred to adopt an ordinance that could provide reasonable regulation on the location and siting of adult entertainment businesses, but found through the Supreme Court actions, as you've heard recently, that has been thrown out by the courts. As a public administrator and city manager, I find it is very odd that a city can provide regulation on the siting of schools, churches, fast food restaurants, and a whole host of other uses, but cannot provide regulations relating to the location and siting of adult entertainment businesses. This is due to the fact that the Oregon Constitution provides special protections that 48 other states do not provide. The city's ordinance now provides for a licensing of businesses and dancers, similar to the licensing procedures required by OLCC. B&L Entertainment Incorporated has proposed to put in an adult entertainment business in Sandy, and they have filed suit against the city, challenging our registration ordinance to also be unconstitutional. It is difficult at this time to foresee the outcome of this litigation. However, the courts have historically favored businesses over local government when it deals to adult entertainment businesses. As it affects the city of Sandy, I see this as a critical issue. Nude dancing has been proposed to be located on Mining Avenue. If I could show you quickly on this map here.
We're running out of time, too. But go ahead.
If I may.
Yeah, certainly.
And your clerk, maybe she can have
yeah, we got
okay. I think Mining Avenue is a primary route that serves as a pedestrian route from the grade school and the high school down across town and into a primary residential area in this part of town. There are there are several hundred new homes that are located in the community in this part of town. This is the intersection of the crosswalks that are used to get the children back and forth to the park, the library, and the school. The proposed new dancing establishment, as you can see, is right between those two crosswalks. And the material that I've provided to you tonight, I know is very lengthy, so I have gone to the liberty of marking in areas which I think are important, executive summaries. Within that document, you will find that there are many sex-related crimes that are associated with adult entertainment businesses, that crimes increase dramatically associated with these businesses, anywhere from 23 to 1,000% in various cities. And because of that, I think that there is a need for regulation simply to provide locational abilities for cities as it relates to these businesses so that we can keep them away from primary traffic areas of our children as they're traveling to school. I know you have a very busy agenda, and I do appreciate the time that you've provided me.
Armstrong. Is there anybody here opposed to this?
Yes.
Oh.
Rex Armstrong, appearing on behalf of the Oregon ACLU. If I could seek the indulgence of the committee and possibly take more than 3 minutes, because I may be one of the few people...
I'm sorry, but it's the same for
all. I'm the person who's litigated virtually all the cases that everyone's complaining about, and so the message is sort of a complex one. The core provisions of the Oregon Constitution, the guarantees of free expression, religious liberty, and so on, trial by jury, right to bear arms, have remained unchanged in this state for 130 years. The Constitution has been amended over 100 times, but not in the area of the Bill of Rights, in the core area of protection for civil liberties. So this is an extremely serious matter to start tinkering with the Bill of Rights. And it's particularly inappropriate where, as here, proponents have made no effort to use alternative means, such as enactment of statutes or administrative rules, to address the concerns that they claim motivate their efforts. Cities have lost cases precisely because they have not sought to impose regulations of the type which I've been perfectly willing to recommend to local governments, which are constitutional, which address the problems which people claim. Instead, they immediately leap to the simplest course, such as amending the Constitution, because that is the easiest thing they could possibly do, instead of working to comply with existing constitutional restrictions. The federal cases upon which they rely involved decisions that have uniformly been 5-4 decisions by the U.S. Supreme Court, extremely controversial, happened to throw out civil liberties protection, which the Constitution should be understood to provide, that the one that everyone's so excited about, the zoning decision out of Detroit, was a 4-1-4 decision with Justice Powell providing the swing vote in the middle. Justice Stewart, the Republican appointed by Eisenhower to the Supreme Court, very moderate Supreme Court justice, wrote a scathing dissent, said it was a complete abdication of the protection for civil liberties and free expression under the U.S. Constitution. So what we have had in Oregon, rather fortunately, is a court that has produced a series of unanimous decisions authored by former Republican legislators like Robert E. Jones and Wallace Carson, and Judge Mick Gillette, former Solicitor General of the Oregon Attorney General's Office, all of whom have found the analysis that's been developed in the state to be appropriate. The thing that's just remarkable and incredibly frustrating about this process is that to the extent that there are real problems with sexually explicit expression, there are real ways in which to deal with it consistently with the Constitution. But what in effect the people seek to do here is what they can't do with regard to any other expression. If the skinheads wanted to open a tavern in Sandy, I can assure you it would be offensive to the majority of people there. I wouldn't want it to operate there, but there is nothing consistently with the Constitution that would allow the government to stop the skinheads from opening that tavern. It is only in the area of sexually explicit expression that the U.S. Supreme Court has, unfortunately, again by this 4-1-4 decision, sanctioned that kind of selective enforcement of regulations on businesses. And people talk about protection of children. I'm as concerned about protecting children as anyone here. I've got a daughter and a son, both of whom have attended daycare in Portland, one half block away from the Club Macombo, one of the adult businesses that's been referred to here. We have been absolutely unconcerned about that location. We have had absolutely no problems whatsoever with the operation of that daycare facility. Frankly, what is involved here is an attempt to amend the state constitution to do something that is completely unnecessary and to impose regulations on businesses that can be accomplished if there are actual problems that the people are concerned about. Those can be addressed by existing lawful means or by the enactment of new regulations or statutes. What these people seek is basically to get rid of something they don't like, and that's the protection of the minority is exactly what the Bill of Rights is there for, and it's to stop the majority from doing what they wish when there's something they do not like as it relates to expression or religion. And you know, I am sympathetic to the concerns. I wouldn't want a tavern next to my house. I don't care what it offers by way of entertainment.
One question from Representative Miller.
I'd just be...